perhaps one of the best known of these communities, or certainly one of the most stable, was the Hutterite community. Seems to be something wrong with my throat today. I can't quite enunciate words. The Hutterite community. We once visited a Hutterite community in South Dakota about 1940. We went across the country from Pendle Hill to California and visited a number of communities on the way. And one of them was a Hutterite community in South Dakota. And I asked one of the inhabitants, when did you start this community? And she said, 400 years ago. Well, it did start in 1525 in Switzerland, and just about the time of Luther's Reformation, so it must have been one of the earliest Reformed sects. It was run out of Switzerland. I think the leader was a man named Hutter. They went from Switzerland to, I think, Moravia, or maybe it was Bavaria. Then they went to the Ukraine in Russia. And finally, about 1875, they moved to the United States and Canada. And they prospered. They knew how to farm. And they didn't allow any of their children to go above the sixth grade, because if they did, they would want to go to the city and leave the farm. The Amish communities, and I could mention them as one of the Pennsylvania communities, have the same idea. They don't allow any of their children to go above the sixth grade, I think, because if they did, they'd want to go to the city.
Mary Mendel was a Hutterite.
Yes.
You all remember her. And she dressed like a Hutterite.
Yes, they dressed like...
I was so embarrassed because my children had shorts. And all the little Hutterite girls had dresses down to their ankles.
Well, these Hutterites lived along one street. On one side there were living quarters, dormitories, and a few houses where people lived. On the other side there were barns and mills and places for dairy operations and so on. I had quite a long talk with a pastor. There were two heads of that community, a religious head called the pastor and an economic head called a Wirt. Would that be a steward or something of that sort? A religious head and a secular head. And the real head of the community was the schoolhouse, where the Hutterites were allowed to teach their religion and to have a public school. And they claimed to be the inventor of kindergartens. And I think that is correct, because from the very first, they had sent their little children, 2 or 3 years old, to school and kept them at school all the way up until a certain grade. So you could see at this schoolhouse, very small children, as well as teenagers, at school. Their population limit, they told me, was 150. When they got bigger than 150, they would swarm and form a new community. And so they multiplied so fast and so well that the Canadian government of Alberta, was it? Or yes. Manitoba, maybe, Alberta, made a law restricting them, saying that you can't have more than one Hutterite farm in a certain area or something. I've forgotten just what the laws were. But the non-Hutterites couldn't compete with the Hutterites. They would have a change of occupation. Certain groups would go out on the field, and other groups would stay at home and tend to the homework, kitchen, dining room. They had one meal, one family meal, they kept the family, and another meal they met or dined together. So this was a very, very successful type of community. They had what they called a Reisebuch, which told in detail all that had happened to them in their journeyings through four or five different countries during the last four centuries. The pastor told me, now the next war, he said, we're going to watch what you Quakers do, because we didn't know what to do in the last war, so we got into trouble. But you Quakers know how to work the government, make the government do what you say, so we're going to watch you. I'm afraid he overestimated our diplomacy, but all the same, we were able to get away with a good deal. Quakers and Mennonites and Brethren working together were able to get a good many concessions for conscientious objectors, even during the First World War, from the government. And Hutterites, being rather ignorant peasant type, were not so well able to deal with the government.
They may be peasant type, but I've never seen people more close to land.
Oh, yes, extremely intelligent.
And as far as their technology goes, they build machines and things.
Oh, yes. Yes, they're not like the Amish. Now, the Amish, that they resemble in a good many ways. If you go out to Lancaster, or Ephrata, or almost any part of Lancaster County, you'll meet with a horse and buggy, probably, on the road, and in it will be an Amish man with his broad-brimmed hat and his plain coat, and perhaps his wife with maybe wearing a plain bonnet, which they took from the Quakers, they admit that. Quakers invented the plain bonnet, and the Amish copied it, but the Amish girls wear what they call a prayer cap, isn't it? There's two types of Amish. The house Amish, which hold their services in the houses, in the homes, and their preachers are selected by lot. They're not professionals. And then the church Amish that have a type of service very much like the Protestant service. And they are real communities, and they are interdependent economically. They help each other, but they are extremely successful farmers.
And to interpolate the question,
yes,
your permission.
Yes, indeed.
How is it that the Hutterites, if they have got it so advanced technologically, they don't allow their children to go beyond the sixth grade, where they get it from?
Well, they want them to know how to read and write and do arithmetic, but they think if they learn those things, to reading and writing and arithmetic, they learn all that they need on the farm. And if they go to high school or college, they'll get ideas which will not take them back to the farm, but take them away from the farm.
I see that point clearly, but Bill Say was saying just now how well advanced they are technologically.
Yes, in their farm machinery, that's
yes,
true.
Yes, in the farm machinery. And they've learned it not for the school, for any school. They just learned it by a school of hard knocks. Like the Canadian government hired them to clear off so many thousands of acres for farmland, for settlers. Hmm. And they invented this machine, this huge machine that would pull up trees by hundreds of trees by their roots and down into the ground, get the roots, and just maybe mow down any number of acres in a little short while. It was built by a man who just tried over and over and finally got it to work.
Yes, they look like peasants and talk like, they have a German dialect. They don't talk English. It's a strange German dialect, which I suppose existed at the time they left Switzerland.
The Duke of Ors expressed their idea about the schools this way. They say if the children go to the public school in Canada, they learn to live in a money economy and to be willing to serve in the Canadian Army. And therefore they won't let them go to school. But the government has been so extremely harsh with them that they are beginning to send their children to the public school.
Yes, a number of them were put in prison for not sending their children to school.
Well, also the Amish were put in prison here about 1940.
Yes. And they refused to salute the flag. That was one crime they committed. But that question came before a Quaker judge, Albert Maris, and he ruled that we couldn't interfere with their religion, since religion is free in this country, and you can believe what you please. Therefore, they have a right not to refuse the flag.
But seeing that, seeing that we are living in such an advanced age, do they, are they able now to keep their young people within that group?
To a large extent, not entirely. I don't know how many of you saw that play called Plain and Fancy about the Amish, how two very fancy New Yorkers came into an Amish community and the kind of adventures they had. It was a pretty good portrayal of the contrast between Amish simplicity and fancy New Yorkers. Yes, the Duke of Boris constitute a very interesting form of community life, and one particular group called the Sons of Freedom. Now, they're called Sons of Freedom because of their animals, aren't they? Or
yes,
Anna's lived among the Duke of Boris, and I haven't.
They don't want their cows to be shut up in barns.
So the freedom applies to cows and not Duke of Boris.
And then do they live in the houses then?
The cows stray around as they do in India.
They came to this country and were helped by the Quakers because they were pacifists. Quakers financed their coming to this country, and particularly Canada, and Tolstoy wanted to help finance the migration of the Duke of Boris, who were Russians, and he wrote a book to finance the migration called The Resurrection, wasn't that it?
Resurrection. I'll tell that story. All right. And they drink some more water.
I don't know what's something wrong with my throat today. It doesn't seem to operate properly.
The English friends, this was in the 1890s, the English friends who were taking an interest in the Duke of Boris were at that stage where they hadn't fully accepted fiction as a good use of time and thought. And they were shocked by Resurrection. Now, it's an interesting thing that if you ask current people, Russians, they say that Resurrection is their favorite book of Tolstoy. And yet, here were all these Quakers turning down this money themselves. So they took a lot of them to Cyprus. And Cyprus didn't suit them because they didn't hold offices. Then they took them on to British Columbia, and other groups came across Canada, but all of them got more or less to the west, and they prospered because they lived so extremely economically, and the women pulled the plows, and they didn't have to have animals, they just worked day and night, and they put up jam, and it was better jam and jelly than other people made, and Canada used it for the troops abroad. Well, the Duke of Boris split up into three divisions. One was called Canadians. They were the most, they were willing to be citizens and pay taxes. The next were called farmers, and then the most exact and the most interesting and amusing were Sons of Freedom.
They're the ones who take off their clothes and march through the streets when they want to make a protest.
Yes, now the Sons of Freedom say that the nearer they can get to nature, the better. And they like to work in the fields without clothes on. And that just goes against the nature of the Canadian inhabitants who have made it an offense that you can be thrown into jail for years for going without your clothes. I once went to a party of old women who were going down to the river to swim. And we swam, and Duke Boris are vegetarians, strict vegetarians, but they eat a great deal. So they're all rather corpulent. And these old ladies were sitting in a big circle comparing who was the fattest when they heard in the distance the siren of a motorcycle police. Well, you never saw any people get into their clothes so fat. As a matter of fact, the motorcycle police came to bring back some documents which they confiscated and then found there was no harm in them, so they brought them back to the village and they didn't come down to the river at all. Well, then I'm going on, Howard, so that's thy voice. There are two of these community types that go in for dancing, the Shakers and the Dukabors. I saw the, have you been amongst them? Do you know their customs?
Shakers? No.
No, the Dukabors.
No.
No, you're just talking from hearsay.
No, I was speaking of the Hederites when I was...
Oh, the Hederites, not the Dukabors.
No, I never... I don't know.
I see. Well, they're in the same part of Canada. Now, the dancing. It occurs at their Sunday services. And it's kind of like a Virginia reel. That's the nearest comparison I could make. And the men line up on one side and the women on the other side. And they have a kiss of peace. And they go through all these maneuvers. Now, it really is very charming to hear them sing. I tried to find out what kind of music it was, and I found that it was the Russian peasant mode of about 200 years ago. And they gather up in one another's houses and they sing chorales for a whole evening in the most agreeable way. Now the Amish do this and the Moravians. You can get a number of different kinds of music from these pietist sects.